Good morning. This is Pastor Alan Hathaway. For the benefit of those who will be watching the video, I am actually preparing this video to be shared in our regular service. I am under quarantine because I had contact with somebody with COVID-19, and I will be under quarantine until Friday. So I am preparing this to be aired on Sunday morning for our congregation. But I'm glad you're able to join us for this morning. This will be a little longer video because I will be sharing my entire message this morning. If you would like to see the normal slides that I have with my message, you can go to our website, Garrison Church of God, and look at our sermon download page. And on that page, I will have posted a PDF of the slides that I had prepared for this message. I hope that you will enjoy this message. This message is the final one in my series, Preparing for Anything, a look at Psalm 46. The message is When God is in Control. Several years ago, I had an interesting conversation with a gentleman who's a friend of mine. He is quite intelligent, but we had some disagreements over some things. He had caught on to a conspiracy theory that was on the internet, and I told him, even though I respected him and respected his thinking process, I had real doubts about the ideas that were being shared there and with the veracity or validity of that particular concept. As we move into these very final months, and actually last final weeks of this very troubling year, we find ourselves stirred up, confused, conflicted about the things that have taken place in our world. This psalm was written by the sons of Korah. They were a group of musicians that controlled the worship of the temple for many, many centuries, from the time of David all the way past the exile. They were leaders and directors of the worship. And as a result, the 10 or possibly 11 psalms that are written in the book of Psalms reflect this long period of time for these particular men. In the introduction to this psalm, we find a very interesting thing. In the Hebrew, it reads, as most of our Bibles read, a psalm of the sons of Korah, a song for virgins. Likely the Hebrew word alamoth, which means young virgin woman in this circumstance, is being used as a musical notation, indicating that it was a psalm which was written to be sung by sopranos. However, when it was translated into Greek in the centuries prior to the birth of Christ, the translation struggled with the meaning of this statement, for they translated it this way, for the end, for the sons of Kor, a psalm concerning secret things. In verses 5 through 6, we read these words, God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her just at the break of dawn. The nations raged. The kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice. The earth melted. I'd like for us to look at several different phrases from these two verses. The first phrase in verse 5 is, I want us to consider the idea of God being in the midst of us, and that we will not be moved, that God will help us just in the break of dawn, or as we would say it, in the nick of time. No matter if the nations rage, no matter if the kingdoms and the world is shaking around us, God will utter his voice. and the very earth, the elements, will melt at his power. As Christians, we can be confident in these truths this day. Let's begin with prayer. Father Almighty, I thank you for this time we can share together. I thank you for your blessing, your care, and your anointing upon each and every one. I pray, Father, as we study your word together, that you will direct our minds toward your will, toward your purpose, toward your direction. I pray, Father, that you will anoint each and every one listening to hear what your Spirit would say to their heart. And I pray, Father, that you will anoint me to speak what is needed to your people. I believe and pray this in Jesus' name and for his glory and honor. Probably the reason why the translators of this psalm had written, or the writers of this psalm had written, the concept of sopranos as a musical notation at the beginning of the psalm is from these two verses. Jerusalem is described as a young virgin woman set upon by circumstances in that verse. She is at the edge of her resolve when God steps in to defend her. Isaiah would picture Jerusalem as a virgin who would shake her head and laugh in triumph behind the back of her enemies, the Assyrians. Such an image was common in the ancient literature, a metaphor for a city or a people. Jeremiah would also use this metaphor for Israel and Judah and Jerusalem in his writings. We don't know when this particular psalm was written. It may well date to the time of King Hezekiah and Isaiah. In Isaiah chapter 37, we read these verses. Then Isaiah, the son of Amoz, sent to Hezekiah, saying, "Thus says the Lord God of Israel, because you have prayed to me against Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, this is the word which the Lord has spoken concerning him. The virgin, the daughter of Zion, has despised you, laughed you to scorn. The daughter of Jerusalem has shaken her head behind your back. Whom have you reproached and blasphemed? Against whom have you raised your voice and lifted up your eyes on high? Against the Holy One of Israel." In other words, God says, "I will defend my people and my city." He tells this to Hezekiah at a time when Hezekiah is about laying out prostrate on the floor. His life is seemingly coming to an end. Judah has been invaded by the most ferocious people that they had ever experienced, the Assyrians. They were in desperate need. And God chooses this image to place in Isaiah's mind, telling him very strongly that he needed to trust God in the midst of this circumstance. No matter what comes at us, no matter what difficulties we face, we can trust God in the midst of those circumstances. One of the most interesting periods in the history of the Jewish people, we don't have a lot of writings from that period. Much of that takes place during what we call the intertestamental period. During that period of time, Alexander the Great had come and conquered most of the world, most of the Middle East, and much of the eastern part of Europe, and much of the northern part of Africa. He was a tremendously successful leader. Wasn't much of a person, but he was a great military leader. When he died unexpectedly, his kingdom fell into conflict. and was eventually divided among his family and his generals. Two of those generals were Ptolemy the First, Soter, and Seleucus the First, Nicator. Both of these men's lifespan and reigns were almost identical. They ended their reigns in 282 and 281, respectively. They began as rulers of their own kingdoms in 305 BC. They were both generals under Alexander the Great. They were at times allies, and later they became bitter rivals. They both would carve out kingdoms from Alexander the Great's conquest. Ptolemy would take Egypt and the northern part of Africa for his kingdom. The man Seleucus would take Babylon, the area of Babylon, which he would soon lose even before his own reign ended, but he would gain and keep control of Asia Minor and Syria. They would establish two of the most powerful kingdoms in the ancient world. Their dynasties would last almost 300 years. Ptolemy's last child to reign was Cleopatra the Great, who ruled Egypt and was the lover of Mark Antony. The other man who would close the reign of the Seleucids or Seleucid Empire was named after his great-great-great-great ancestor. He was called Seleucus the Seventh. Both of these empires would end with the Romans conquering them. But during the period of years, centuries that they existed, the Jewish people were sandwiched between them. They were sandwiched in between these two nations warring with one another. Most of the war was a Cold War, and a lot of it was involved espionage and sabotage and feints and conspiracies. The Greek version of this particular psalm seems to reflect this particular world. It is the world that these translators lived in. They struggled with the conspiracies swirling around them, with the threats of both the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. They fought among them, and sometimes they used them for their own ends, and sometimes they were used as pawns in the broader battle between these kingdoms. However, it is dangerous when we begin to assume that the struggles that we are going through reflect the realities of God's full purpose. These people had written that this was a hidden thing, a secret thing. This psalm was somehow a mystical conspiracy psalm. That somehow, if you understood the conspiracy, you understood the mystery or the secret, you could put it all together. When simply, to be honest with you, Alamoth, which means young virgin, was a musical notation that meant to be sung by sopranos. Isaiah chapter 8, beginning in verse 11, says this: "For the Lord spoke thus to me with a strong hand, and instructed me that I should not walk in the way of this people, saying, 'Do not say a conspiracy concerning all that this people call a conspiracy, nor be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. The Lord of hosts, him shall you hallow. Let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. He will be as a sanctuary, but a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel, as a trap and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And many among them shall stumble. They shall fall and be broken and be snared and be taken. When we live our lives in fear of conspiracy, allowing that to dominate our thinking process, or allow other things to dominate our thinking process and cause us to fear, we begin to stop trusting in God. And when we do that, we are failing to be the men and women God has called us to be. We begin to read everything through that lens, and it is destructive to us emotionally and spiritually. The particular conspiracy that my friend shared with me happened to be about the Twin Towers. Shortly after the invasion of Iraq, there came to be a theory about the fall of the Twin Towers. The belief was that the airplanes that struck the Twin Towers could not have brought them down. Instead, there had to be a secret government conspiracy or cabal that had taken place where they had planted explosives in the superstructure of the buildings and brought them down. Of course, the CIA was blamed, or some other nefarious secret government organization that had brought this all down, and there was all kinds of mysterious stuff on the internet to somehow seemingly prove this conspiracy. But there has never been any proof of that. The people of the time who translated this psalm lived in a very similar time. Things were conflicting, things were changing, things were frightening. And so they looked at that and saw a conspiracy and thought somehow this psalm, which already the concept of the virgin daughter of Zion had been brought into this concept of the end of the times, it must be a sign, it must be something that means that the world is coming to an end. But in truth, Alamoth probably just meant sing this with sopranos. We endanger ourselves when we draw ourselves into conspiracies. It is a troubling thing. And it was troubling for me with my friend. I don't believe he continued to believe that. In fact, I'm pretty sure he has dropped that conspiracy theory. But the truth of the matter is that those things are destructive to us. They eat at our faith in a way that is unhealthy. These conspiracy theories about the Twin Towers said that somebody within our government wanted to go to war in Iraq, so they destroyed the Twin Towers so that they could bring about a war in Iraq. And to be honest with you, I am quite skeptical quite often about our government. But as Chuck Colson pointed out very clearly, conspiracies tend to fall apart quickly. And the reason for that is that the self-interest of the participants and the greed that they have will destroy any conspiracy. And the larger the conspiracy, the more complex it is, the more quickly it dissolves and comes apart. And I believe that is very true. That's why I don't put a lot of stock in that particular conspiracy. It is hard to maintain conspiracies. What I do trust a great deal is in God. I trust Him. Interestingly, in 1939, a poster was produced that has become sort of a meme in this generation. It's a large red poster that says, "Keep calm and carry on." It was printed, over 2 million of them were printed, and it now appears that there may be no more than 17 of them left in the world, but over 2 million of them were printed by the British government. as the lead-up to World War II. It was an attempt to try and calm the population and give them a sense of confidence in the midst of what the government knew would be a very, very difficult time. It was rediscovered in 2000. One of the posters was in a box in a bookstore, and it, from that point on, gathered excitement and generated all kinds of things. There are all kinds of clothing that have keep calm and carry on them, and there have been all kinds of takeoffs on that as well. It is a good thing to think about when we are struggling and when we are facing difficulties. Keep calm, trust God, and carry on. Matthew chapter 18 is an interesting thing. Jesus is preparing his disciples for that moment when he will no longer be with them. And in verse 14, he tells them some very important things about one another, about their future, and some very important things about facing the world. I want to share those with you as we move toward the conclusion of this particular message. Beginning in verse 14, Jesus says, "Even so, it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he refuses even to hear the church, let him be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. Assuredly, I say to you, whatever you bind," and these are the verses I want you to particularly pay attention to. "Assuredly, I say to you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I say to you that if two of you agree on earth concerning anything that they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there in the midst of them." Wow. He tells us about how we should deal with our brothers and sisters in these moments. One of the things that stress does to us and moments of crisis do to us is we very often turn on one another. We attack one another. And Christ tells us that he is deeply concerned about our interpersonal relationships and that we should not allow our fears to destroy our relationships with one another, that we should control those things. But he goes on to tell us that we have the power to make eternal decisions. For he says, "Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven." In other words, our decisions in this moment have eternal consequences. They mean something in eternity. Your willingness to be courageous in the face of fear means something in eternity. You are not dominated, controlled by that fear. It means something. You are God's child. As the writer of Psalm 46 says, God is in the midst of her. He shall help her. God will help us in the midst of all circumstances. He is in our midst. He will help us at the very break of dawn, in the nick of time. He will be there to assist us. And God's voice will go forth with power. He will shake the very earth, and the foundations of the earth will melt at his voice because he cares about each one of us. He cares about our circumstances. In a world of conflict and political unrest, it was easy to see conspiracy in everything. Even a simple musical notation could become a conspiracy. As Christians, we must be careful that we do not allow ourselves to be blinded by present circumstances, that they not paint the world in fear, and that we give way to that fear. Instead, we need to believe and trust God is in the midst of it and cares deeply about us and wants the best in our lives. The writers of Psalm 46 were confident that God was in the midst of their circumstances and that He was in control. God is in the midst, and we will not give way to fear. We belong to Him. We know that He will move heaven and earth for us. God, in all circumstances, has everything under control. So I will not fear. I hope that you will not fear. God bless you. Have a wonderful day, and may the Lord's face shine upon you. Have a wonderful day. God bless.